WWE, the custody of a child will be determined in a match. Oh, I knew he was going to do that.
Hulk Hogan is a jabroni, heart of a bride. But my boss, the Steph McMahon, is not jabroni.
Let's get a horse of time, fool.
Put that cigarette out.
Will you stop?
What's up, Drunk Marks? Welcome to this week's episode of Drunk Wrestling History. I am your styling, profiling, not really, but I am your designated host, Adam, and with us, as always, are the styling and profiling Drunk Wrestling historians themselves.
This is Eddie, Woozle Wuzzle.
And this is Scott. It's Ghetto Blaster time, fool.
All right, what do we have our... for sustenance for this week's episode?
I'm drinking right now a Ruby Grapefruit White Claw, which I refer to as a Ruby Riot. but it's like look, you guys, I'm not gonna lie to you, I've been drinking.
Dude,
I had a shot of Jaeger right before this. I've had a Manhattan. I've had a Mr. Perfect beer. I think I'm on my fourth White Claw. This is the most drunk I've been on the show since I think our first recording, like back like last October. And once I finish this White Claw, I'm going to open a natural lime White Claw.
Thank you. Well, it's funny you mentioned lime because I am doing a tropical lime Corona seltzer that I'm about to open now. So, cheers, everyone.
Very good.
All right, and I've got Rat Bastard Root Beer.
Ooh.
The tagline on the bottom does say, "This time, put it in your mouth."
Oh, and okay. Suck it?
Because, and it's good because I was going to use a different orifice, but, I mean, this is the... this is wow. The first root beer that came with instructions, so I might as well... do that correctly.
Wait, your other root beers didn't go there? Uh-oh.
No room for error with that one.
Yeah. No, yeah, this one's laid out. They didn't IKEA it and give me creepy, weird instructions or horse product. The Rat Bastard Root Beer looks like they're here to take care of the customer.
I saw Steve-O chug a beer through one of his other orifices one time.
I saw Steve-O expel weed through that same orifice one time.
Expel?
Yeah, he like swallowed a condom with weed like when he was going to like Denmark or something. and he Menudo'd it out on stage at a performance. like he was trying to get it out before, like in the hotel, and it just wasn't happening, and then like it hit him like when he was on stage.
Tess is in the crowd taking notes.
Wow.
Anyway, moving right, on.
Moving on.
After that 180. All right. This week's episode.
What a show.
We only give the classiest and most the brightest atmosphere in this show, and we are just so appreciative of all of you that are on for the ride. No matter...
Continually raising the bar.
Yes.
Bi-monthly.
This week's episode, we are taking it back to the year of our Lord, 1989. This is going to be a span of a few months, because this is going to be the collection of World Heavyweight Championship bouts between... Ricky the Dragon Steamboat and the Nature Boy Ric Flair.
The only thing greater than Flair versus Steamboat in 89 was Gutfest 89.
Oh, nothing was better than Gutfest 89.
Exactly. It was an event surpassed by none other.
It was a show not like you've ever seen before.
Thank you.
Yeah. Scott, so this is very much your domain. So I think it's only appropriate for you to really like set the stage for this podcast, because like Adam was not born in 1989.
I was
right.
I wasn't aware. I keep joking around that when the Loma Prieta earthquake happened, I shit my pants. That's a statistical guess. I just don't know if that actually happened. But
wait, Adam, what is your birth year?
87.
Oh, you were born in 87. Okay, yeah. Okay. So you're a little bit older than I thought you were. Okay, gotcha. So you were like 2. Like,
but is 2 years old like an appropriate age to test your pants? Like how? Like at what age do you stop wearing diapers? I don't, because you know me, I know nothing about babies. I have, you know, I have no experience with them.
I don't fucking
potty
know.
Training is, yeah. What did Adam just drop an F bomb? You really pissed him off, dude. You better apologize.
He does it sometimes.
Don't you remember that Valentine's Day episode? Like 30 seconds in, and already had a plethora of it.
Yeah, okay, that's true. That's true.
I was the only single guy on that episode. Damn it.
That's right. That's right. Lucky.
So, wow. So, Adam, you were 2 when all of this went down. And in early 89, Steamboat had already departed the WWF and showed up in the NWA as Eddie Gilbert, Hot Stuff Eddie Gilbert, if you will, as his tag team partner in a match. And they were facing Barry Windham and Ric Flair. And Steamboat actually pinned Ric Flair in that match. That led to a title match between Flair and Steamboat at Chi-Town Rumble 89. And a few days before that match, they had an in-ring spat where Steamboat actually stripped Flair down to his underwear and then beat the crap out of him.
I ended up watching that just to understand like what the context was. I mean, I know that it wasn't just like, and yeah, going into the matches, I know it wasn't just, you're the opponent. Let's wrestle here. Okay, this was the result. Let's follow it up with another pay-per-view and then follow up with another pay-per-view. So yeah, this one, I really got to see what the context was of Flair being the dirtiest player in the game versus Ricky Steamboat, the family man, and the one that was fighting with morals as opposed to Flair fighting for tangibles.
Pussy.
Yeah, the true ladies man. Yeah. So they had actually had matches in the early 80s, so this wasn't their first series of matches. But both guys really were at the top of their game. And if you ask me, Ricky Steamboat was my favorite wrestler in the 80s. And
that's reasonable.
He was just incredible. You know, everybody talks about Flair's chops, but you watch this trilogy of matches, and Steamboat's, I will put up there with anybody in wrestling ever. His chops were incredible. Steamboat was so good in the ring and actually matched up with Flair really well. I had the chance to meet Ricky Steamboat in 2011 in Atlanta when we went to WrestleMania 27. And I wanted to talk to him about the Flair or about the Savage match at WrestleMania 3. As I mentioned, that's my favorite match of all time. But he actually said his favorite set of matches was against Flair because it was almost like a night off. Those guys just knew what the other was going to do before they did it. And it was easy. They could just get in the ring and go 60 minutes, no problem. Both guys were in phenomenal shape. And what sparked it all was Steamboat's return to the NWA and his spark of a trilogy of matches against Ric Flair. So let's start out with the Chi-Town Rumble 89.
Really quick before you get into that, I just want to point out you mentioned meeting Ricky Steamboat in Atlanta. That's going to tie into the Atlanta cab story.
It doesn't have to.
Oh, that story will be told on this podcast, Scott.
Okay, but it doesn't have to. I'm just saying. We don't need to talk about that.
No, that's the most infamous drunk wrestling story of all time.
Okay.
It's coming up soon. It's happening. Also you and Gary Radnich.
Oh my god, fuck that guy. Seriously, yeah, real Gary Radnich.
What does Gary Radnich have to do with this? What did Scott, we do wrong?
Scott got stuck next to him on a flight to Atlanta.
Okay, so what happened is we got on a flight to Atlanta. We had a layover somewhere and then had to change planes.
I think it was like
and
Dallas.
Then we went from Dallas.
It was, by the way, it was a red eye.
Yes, exactly. And we had to change planes, so we had a little puddle jumper, whatever, from Dallas to Atlanta. It was like an hour flight.
No, and I was like, it was longer than that, dude. Because
really?
Yeah, because this fiasco went on for a while.
It felt like 10 hours. And I was going to try to sleep because I didn't really sleep on the flight from San Francisco to Dallas. And I'm like, fuck it, I'll just sleep on the way to Atlanta. Well, I got stuck next to Mr. I Want to Talk About Everything Under the Sun Sports, and I didn't get to sleep. This dude wanted to talk about all sorts of sports, and Ed was hella laughing when he got off the plane. He's like, dude, you fucking got stuck next to Gary Radnich on the flight from Dallas to Atlanta. So that's where that comes. It wasn't the real Gary Radnich. It was just some schmuck who wanted to talk sports the whole way.
Oh, really? Okay.
It was fucking fantastic, Adam.
Because authentically, I do not like Gary Radnich. I'm more of...
I don't mind him.
I'm more of a Mr. Involvement Vernon Glenn myself. I'll talk sports with him. He's actually been to... or been a part of some of the improv shows that I've seen in San Francisco, and he's fantastic. But get... And for our Bay Area listeners, Gary Radnich on Kron. For me, as an obsessive sports fan, don't ever let me do that to you on a flight, Scott. I care so much about your well-being and will only unleash sports in the proper setting. But
well, no, and I know, and I'd be like, Adam, I'm tired, dude. I want to go to sleep. Yeah. But this dude just would not shut the fuck up. Yeah. And I would try like conversation killers. And he just kept going. Like, he wouldn't stop. And Ed thought it was the greatest thing ever happened.
It was the greatest thing until the cab. Yeah. 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 See, you don't do the red eye flight, right? You got to do it the way I do. You have nothing to drink after like 11 a.m. You don't eat after like 2. You get to the airport. You get like a sandwich or something. You get about 4 shots of tequila. You get on the plane. You take 2 Ambien. You pass the fuck out until you land.
Is that what they did to Mr. T in the A-Team?
Maybe.
To get him to fly?
I don't know. That's what I do to me every time I fly, every time I do a red eye.
Spoken like a true WrestleMania veteran.
Hell yeah, dude. Making the towns.
So that's the Gary Radnich story, Adam.
Yeah. And the cab story is coming up when we get to the WrestleMania cities.
That was a teaser for the cab story, pretty much.
You know what? I feel like we keep teasing this. Maybe we should, next time we get together, see if we can get Chow over here.
Yeah, or not. I'm just throwing that out there. It doesn't need to happen.
It's happening.
It's happening.
All right, let's get into the Flair Steamboat trilogy.
Yes, so first up, after the tag match goes down, after the in-ring altercation where Steamboat strips Flair down to his underwear, which, by the way, that's an 80s thing. Yeah.
Yes.
You don't see that nowadays where, like, Drew McIntyre is trying to rip Randy Orton's clothes off and strip him down to his underwear. That was only during the 80s. I don't remember that happening in the 90s too much.
I know. I keep waiting for someone to rip Zelina Vega's clothes off.
It's still not happening unless you're Aleister Black, unfortunately.
Sad.
So.
But he's easily wearing at $10,000 worth of clothing and accessories.
Yes. Because legitimately, because that's a Flair thing to do.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, totally.
He gets paid $8,000 from the NWA, but then spends like $12,000 on his wardrobe. Total Flair thing to do.
Skills. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, living the gimmick, brother. So the weird thing about this match, this is Chi-Town Rumble 89. The match starts and Steamboat's already in the ring?
Yeah, exactly. I had that in my notes. I was like, what? Steamboat's already in the ring? Yeah, Flair comes down with a chick. He's got a chick with him. She gives him flowers, which was, like, that's kind of goofy.
Yes.
Who's the Japanese dude with Flair?
Matsuda. Hiro Matsuda.
Okay. Okay, I was thinking it was Kenji Shibuya, but yeah, Hiro Matsuda. Okay.
Yeah, it's Matsuda. And he was only around for this one. That was it for him.
Right. That was, like, the weirdest part about it.
Yeah, so he was with Flair for a very, very short time. Flair had him in his corner. He was almost like an advisor. He was like kind of taking the place of J.J. Dillon, I guess. But really, okay, after this match, he was gone. The weird thing about this is Flair is supposed to be the heel, but you can already hear the crowd starting
they
to turn. Yeah, they really do. They love Flair because mm-hmm. they're really presenting Steamboat as like, this is the family guy. And Adam mentioned this in the intro. Steamboat is your family guy. Flair is like the ladies man. The lifestyle, the money. He's the polar opposite of Ricky. And I think the crowd really started to kind of swerve over to Flair's side a little bit more, because it was pretty audible during his entrance. You could hear the crowd cheering him.
Well, they played it all wrong, because, like, if you look at those two guys, like, which one of those do you got? Which one of those two guys do you want to hang out with?
What, true. Yes, exactly.
Not the guy who brings his fucking kid to the ring.
Yeah. Yeah, you're going to have a nice barbecue at his place. Maybe have a glass of wine and you're in bed by 9. Or do you want to hang out with Flair and you're not getting home till the next morning?
Exactly. Yeah, right. You're going to the Omni Hotel and, like, yeah, you're going to have a good time.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So the
you're gonna come home rubbed raw.
And Flair paid for it.
Yeah.
So the thing to notice about this match, Ed, and you had mentioned previously on a couple of episodes that you didn't really watch NWA because of a lack of cable, but Tommy Young was infamous for being involved in these title matches.
Okay.
And you could almost put the guy on the clock. You could almost set a timer to him for a ref bump. It was almost every single title match he was involved in, he would shove the heel champion or the heel challenger. They would get into an altercation of some type. And later in the match, there would be a ref bump or something funky that Tommy Young saw where he would factor into the finish. So as soon as you see Tommy Young in a match, you can almost bank on shenanigans every time.
Okay.
So I wanted to clear that up about Tommy Young.
He's like the Danny Davis of NWA.
But he's not a heel.
Right, yeah.
Okay. He's not swinging into the heel's favor, but there's always shenanigans involved somehow. Not necessarily his fault.
Right. That makes sense. Okay.
So in this match, you get all your classic Flair staples. His chops, his corner flip into an apron run, into a top rope, into a crossbody. You get your ref push and your ref push back that I talked about. You get your pin with his feet on the ropes. You get your figure four with holding the ropes to kind of add a little bit of leverage. This match had approximately 608 chops thrown in total. And
I counted 612.
Oh, well, there you go. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. Yeah. That's the official count. I would say the crowd, we talked about it earlier, they're cheering for Flair. I would say the crowd was 60-40 Steamboat in this one. Steamboat was still fairly new to the NWA. He had the crowd in his corner. Over the next couple of matches, that kind of changes up a little bit. What notes did you have on this, on the first match, the Chi-Town Rumble 89?
Well, I just had a few spots. Okay, so like, first off, I had that Steamboat was going for pins right away. Like, he was just trying to knock this out, and that was very Steamboat. You know, like, that was not unique to this match. That was a Steamboat thing. There was a part where Steamboat hit the ropes. Flair did a drop down. Steamboat hit the opposite ropes and landed on Flair on a side headlock, which was really cool. I don't think I've seen anyone do that besides him.
Right.
You know. Also, like, some guys from the Bears were in the front row. But
it was Chicago. Yeah.
Yeah, but the refrigerator wasn't there, so who cares?
Did he have the stink on him from WWF, maybe, from being at WrestleMania 2?
I don't know. He just maybe he was... I don't know. Maybe he was at fucking Geno's East.
or he may not even be playing football anymore. I don't remember when he left football.
I don't, me either. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure on that. I know he was a G.I. Joe figure by this point, but yeah. I don't know when he left football.
Yeah. JR was a couple times taking a shot at WWF, I felt, because he kept talking about this is the real world championship, which goes back to he kept saying 19. He wasn't saying 1919. He kept saying 19. This title goes back to 19 with fucking whoever it was, George Hackenschmidt or...
Yeah.
Whoever. So I was like, that was kind of interesting, you know?
Yeah, little did he know, years later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A big spot for me was Flair hit the splash off the top rope. Right, he did the top rope spot where he would normally get slammed off it, but he actually landed a splash.
Yes.
Which was crazy because, the majority of the Ric Flair matches I've seen were in WWE. He never, ever, ever, ever fucking hit that. I want to say around 2003, he finally hit, I forget who, maybe Kurt Angle? He hit someone like, and he like chopped, he hit him with like a chop, like a Tatanka, like... tomahawk chop over the head or something stupid, but he finally landed a move off that top rope.
Because you always saw him thrown into the buckle. he does that flip, and then he runs across the ring apron on the outside.
No,
runs to the,
right.
Yeah, and then he runs to the top rope, and he gets body slammed. That's like a Flair slammed. Staple.
Right, right. It was just one of the Ric Flair classics.
Yeah.
And he, like, at one point, I forget who it was, but he hit a move on him, and the crowd went fucking crazy, and even Jim Ross was like, oh my God, he actually hit someone with that.
Yeah.
And then we're like, yeah. Like, he would go for that move, and, like, Jerry Lawler would like, make jokes like, oh, this never goes well for him, but he hit Steamboat with a splash off it. And then it was like, so I wanted to ask you, like, was that not a move that got regularly reversed on him in NWA or early on? Was like, was that something that he,
It was shocking to see him actually hit it with success. Okay. That's why I kind of had it in my notes too, because you're so used to seeing Flair either get clotheslined as he's running across the apron, or they catch him in the opposite corner and body slam him. Like, that is a Flair staple. Him actually hitting something off the top rope is like Haley's Comet, dude. It just doesn't come around very often. So to see it in this match was like, holy shit. Like, he actually hit something with that.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Okay. That's good to know, because I was like, I really wasn't sure about that.
Yeah, no, you. Yeah, it was definitely a rare occurrence.
Yeah, they did a part where I think Flair hit, or Steamboat hit Flair with a crossbody, and they went over to the top rope to the floor.
Yes.
They got outside, then they got back in, and they did that move where they do the Flair was pinning Steamboat, and they bridge out of it, which is the fakest move. That's the fakest move in wrestling.
Yeah.
Right. The first time I saw that, I want to say it was the Rockers and the Brainbusters. I was like, oh my God. Then I figured out how they were doing it. I was like, oh, it was kind of like the Destroyer. It's cool until you figure it out.
Yeah, and then Trevor Murdoch starts doing it, and you're like, fuck this move.
Oh, fucking Trevor Murdoch.
Shit, I forgot Trevor Murdoch did that.
Sorry, guys.
Good God. But so, yeah, it was a good match, back and forth a lot. And then it was Steamboat went for a splash, right? He missed it, and Flair suddenly knew he had it won. And he, like, woo! And he goes for a figure four. Well, the ref was down at that point, right? There had been a ref
bump.
That was
the ref bump, yeah, that I talked about earlier. You knew Tommy Young was going to figure in.
Yeah, so Flair goes for a figure four. Steamboat rolls him up into a small package, and you're like, well, whatever, the referee's not there. Teddy Long run in, 1-2-3.
Yep.
And I love this finish. I loved it so much. This is such a good finish.
He appeared out of nowhere.
Yeah, did he crawl in front of the ring? Where the fuck was he hiding?
Well, you know, that wasn't even what I loved about it. What I loved about it was Flair knew he had it won. He got cocky. He fucking did a woo. And he went for a figure four, and he didn't have it. You know what I mean? And it left Flair an out. Like, Flair just kind of got caught off guard.
Yeah.
It was perfectly booked. Do you know if Dusty was the booker at the time?
I believe he was, yes. Oh, wait. No, this is 89. No, Dusty had already jumped ship.
Oh, yeah, because Dusty was at 6, which was 90. Okay.
Yes. So he got fired, actually, in 88 when the Road Warriors turned heel. That's when they did the spike in the eye, and that was Dusty's call to get color on television. So he was actually fired right after Starrcade 88, and that was in December.
Okay, so I would love to know who came up with this finish, because it was fucking genius.
It was not Dusty Rhodes, unless he had scripted something out for Steamboat coming back. And this was going to be the first match that they would have used, but I don't think it was Dusty, and I don't know. Was it Kevin Sullivan? No, he was Booker later.
Was it Watts?
It might have been Watts. Yeah, because they had Jim Hurd there for a little bit. They had Watts.
It wasn't fucking Hurd.
It could have been Ole Anderson, actually.
Okay.
It could have been Ole on this one.
Okay. That makes sense. I can see that.
Yeah.
Whoever it was, it was brilliant. You know what I mean? It really, you're like, oh, well, we have to have a rematch. Like, a rematch is perfectly reasonable, you know?
Yes, for sure.
Like, Flair just fucking kind of let his guard down and fucked up. Like, Steamboat didn't beat him. Flair beat himself.
Right, right, exactly. Yeah. And these were the kind of shenanigans I'm talking about, where Tommy Young gets taken out, then another ref comes in and counts the fall. These are the things you would usually see when Dusty was booking, because then you would have the original referee come back into the ring and nullify the title win, and the title would go back to the heel champion.
That's
that shit
finish.
Yeah, exactly. I would see that shit with Flair all the time. I don't know how many times I saw Flair drop the strap only to get it returned to him because of some bullshit like this. So when Steamboat actually kept the championship, I was shocked, because I was fully expecting the next Saturday to tune into TBS and they were going to say Ricky Steamboat was stripped of the title. But when he kept it, I was like, holy shit, that's awesome.
Yeah, exactly.
So this kind of set the tone because these two guys, as I said earlier in talking with Steamboat, it was just those guys knew each other so well. They matched up perfectly. They were in such good shape to go 60 minutes, even 30 to 40 minutes was no problem for them.
Mm-hmm.
They could go 100 miles an hour. They could go 10 miles an hour. It didn't matter. They could put in the time.
Yeah, they were fucking fantastic.
Yeah, and Flair was really at the top of his game right here at 89, dude. This is like top-notch Ric Flair.
Yeah. So after the match, we got the backstage promo with Steamboat, right?
Oh, yeah. I don't actually have any notes on that. Is that where they're pouring champagne in his eyes?
Yeah.
They're pouring champagne, and he gets an eye full of champagne. It's the fucking funniest thing, because he's trying to do a promo. I forget who the interviewer is. It might have been, you would know.
Oh, Bob Caudle.
Yes, Bob Caudle. Steamboat's trying to do... Clearly, this was not pre-taped.
Right.
Yeah. He's trying to do an interview, and it's like, he can't even see, and he's like, he'll say,
I think he was trying to play it off like he was overcome with emotion.
Yeah, but yeah. Like, obviously his eyes were fucking burning.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, like, he'll like stop mid-sentence and just like squint and like put his head down, and like, he was fucked up, dude. Like, his eyes were so like... Like, oh my god, it was crazy. Like,
I'm sure Lex Luger was like, yeah, celebrate. Oh shit.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, oh, it was funny as hell, dude, to see him with that shit in his eyes. I saw a movie the other day like that, with something in someone's eyes. I don't want to talk about that.
Oh, was that like finishing on glasses?
Yeah, without. Well, why do you keep talking about that?
You keep bringing it up.
How did you. I don't keep bringing that up, but how did you. I don't keep bringing that up, but how did you know that?
Just a lucky guess. So now it's funny.
I must have gotten drunk and been honest with you.
You did last episode. But it's funny now. You watch sports celebrations now in locker rooms, and they start spraying the champagne around. Guys are actually wearing goggles now. But back in the 80s. Yeah, totally, right? Like, take it like a man. Take those goggles off.
They didn't think about that, back then.
No, absolutely not. And it's funny because if you go back to Hogan's championship, went over the Iron Sheik, Andre dumps a shit ton of champagne in Hogan's eyes.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like the same thing as Ricky Steamboat's going through. Like, God, guys, that was like 5 years ago. You still haven't figured it out? Cover your eyes up when they're pouring the champagne in. Damn. Or use gimmick champagne or something. Shit.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just hilarious. These guys are trying to do an interview and their eyes are just lava at that point.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah.
Eyes are lava.
Yeah, eyes are lava. So that leads us into... Clash of Champions 6, Ragin' Cajun. The Ragin' Cajun. This is at the Superdome, brother. And this event took place the same day as WrestleMania 5, which is funny because WCW had done the same thing the previous year where they had a free Clash of Champions running up against WrestleMania 4. And so they decided to do the same thing against WrestleMania 5. This is a 2 out of 3 falls match. And I was cracking up because in a typical WCW move, both guys get entrances. Ric Flair comes out first because he's not the champion. There's a scrolling graphic behind him that says Ric Flair, and it's spelled R-I-C-K. He's been your champion for the better part of 6 or 7 years now, and you still can't spell his fucking name right.
You think that's why he left?
Fuck you guys. You still can't spell my name. I'm out.
Peace out, bitches.
Steamboat comes out next, and he's got his wife and his kid with him. The kid is wearing a dragon costume.
Yeah, he's just like a baby dragon.
Right. And here comes the scrolling graphic behind Steamboat now, and his scrolling graphic says, Steamboat Ricky, the dragon.
Oh, is that like, did they translate it to Japanese and back to English? Or no, because it would have been like Steamboat Monkey, Ricky.
The Child.
Banana Head.
Oh, dude, I was dying. I'm like, that is such a WCW thing. Like, you look at their stage set for Starrcade 89 that we actually did a show, a review on, and it's like this big, elaborate stage. It was beautiful.
It was awesome. It was awesome.
But this, at the Superdome, it's like a scrolling graphic at like a pizza place that's like showing names or something on it. And they can't fucking spell Ric Flair's name
it's
right.
It's like Chuck E. Cheese without the clapping hands.
Yes. Oh, dude. Just WCW just showing its true colors. So fall number one.
Well, by the way, before you move on to that, let's point out that this is at the Superdome, brother.
Yes.
And there were 5,000 people there.
And Ed, just so the audience knows, how many people does the Superdome seat? Based on your experience there?
Oh my God, 75,000 people. Superdome, by the way, is the shittiest stadium I've ever been to in my life. It's garbage. I fucking hate that place.
Yeah.
New Orleans is definitely the best city ever for WrestleMania, but the Superdome is the shittiest, fucking most garbage stadium. But it holds, yeah, like probably 70,000, at least 70,000 people. And they sold a whopping 5,000 tickets.
That's what I was trying to wonder. Like, even when they panned out, like the ring and the crowds and all the railings there, that was a very intimate space. But I kept saying, this is the Superdome. How the hell did they set this up? Because I remember one time I have been to, this was like way back in the day, I went to an Atlanta Hawks basketball game once, and it was when the it's because relatives were there and we were visiting. I saw the Atlanta Hawks play at the Georgia Dome because Phillips Arena was still being built. What they did is, like, I guess one section of the stadium was for the crowd. The other half of it, they blocked it off with large curtains. So pretty much like a theatrical audience setting for a basketball game. Something tells me they did something similar with this, except shittier.
So what they did was actually fairly smart. They backed the ring up against the like the boards, right? Like the, you know, they have like the wall at a football stadium.
Yeah.
Where like there's the field and then there's like the seats. They backed the ring up against that. So the ring was not in the middle of the 50-yard line. It was like 10 feet, or it was probably 30 feet. From the
30 feet from section first, 208 or something like that.
No, section 108. On the floor.
Oh, makes sense.
And then they only shot it from the one side. So they actually made it look like they looked
bigger than it was.
No, they didn't make it look bigger than it was. They made it look way smaller than it was, but they made it look full.
Okay. Now, all right. That makes sense.
Yeah.
And it wasn't even a tenth full.
Oh, no. It was approximately a 15th full.
Yeah.
Yeah. Meltzer said there were only 6 people there.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, so
he was close.
Yeah. So it was the Superdome, brother. Now, why was it three falls, a 2 out of 3 falls match for the second match? Because I thought that was weird. And I wanted to ask you this because on the video package beforehand, it didn't explain it. Because I was like, 2 out of 3 falls is weird for a second match. So what do you have to say about that?
You would see that in WCW or NWA back in the day. They would do 2 out of 3. Well, I don't think that it didn't make sense. I mean, look, Flair and Steamboat can go 60 minutes, no problem. Right? Okay. So what's the problem with making it a 2 out of 3 fall match?
Well, I have a lot of problems with that.
Why? It's not like, because look, NWA didn't do that all the time. Like WWE at some point last year got carried away with 2 out of 3 fall matches. It was like every SmackDown or every Raw, it was just a string of 2 out of 3 fall matches, right? It was constant.
I forgot about that. That was terrible. Terrible.
Yeah, NWA didn't do that. NWA would sprinkle in a cage match. They would sprinkle in a 2 out of 3 fall match. They would sprinkle in like a first blood match or something like that. But it wasn't uncommon for them to do a 2 out of 3 fall heavyweight title match. They would sprinkle that in on occasion. It's not weird at all. When I heard it was a 2 out of 3 fall match, I'm like, okay, cool. They're probably going to go 60 minutes. And
I mean, I guess this was still the NWA championship, right? Not the WCW championship.
That's correct.
So traditionally, NWA championship matches were always 2 out of 3 falls. So I guess there would have at least been that kind of logic to it.
So maybe like a more traditional?
Yeah. Like, I mean, because that would have been not fairly new, but like, you know, like back in the day, title matches were always 2 out of 3 falls.
Okay. It wasn't common, but they would do it on special occasions.
Okay.
Yep. So that's all right.
Well, we've learned nothing. So let's move on to the match.
Yes. So this one went 55 minutes. As we discussed, it could go 60, and it went 55. Flair won clean with a small package reversal on fall number one in 19 minutes.
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
Fall number two, and this was really, really weird because it's not something you saw very often. Steamboat came out, fall number two on fire. He trapped Flair in a figure four. He hit him with a Boston Crab. Out of nowhere, in 14 minutes, he hits a double arm chicken wing submission and Flair submits.
Right.
That is not something you saw very often from Flair. If I can remember correctly, I don't recall ever seeing Flair submit other than to this move. Like, even when Dusty would hit him with a figure four, I don't recall Flair ever submitting.
But the weird thing about that to me was to set that move up, he was working Flair's lower back. Right? And I'm like, right. To me, like, that doesn't that work your shoulders and your arms? Not your. I would never think that would work your lower back. But Steamboat was working his lower back over.
Right.
Hitting him with forearms. I think he dropped a few knees on his lower back. And, like, the announcers actually, like, put it over. Like, oh, he's working his lower back hard. And so I would think maybe, like, a Boston Crab or a sharpshooter.
Right.
No, he hits him
with
a double fucking chicken wing. It was weird.
And it was the first time I can recall Ricky Steamboat ever hitting that move. So when he actually won a fall with that, it was almost like, okay, does Ricky have a new finisher now? Or are we not going with the crossbody anymore? So
yeah,
it really made you wonder. So yeah, it was literally out of nowhere. He hits a double chicken wing and Flair submits. So yeah. a really bizarre second fall. So
right.
We move into fall three. And the weird thing is we have not had the mandatory Tommy Young ref bump yet. So if we're going to get it, it's going to happen in this fall.
That makes sense.
So Flair does the staple move of the ref shove and Tommy Young shoving him back. That happens in this fall. Flair injures Steamboat's leg and he starts softening him up for the figure four.
And Steamboat selling shit out of it.
Well, that was like one
Steamboat
of the best things.
Steamboat can barely walk.
Yeah. And Steamboat would always make sure his opponent looked like $1 million.
Absolutely.
And Flair did the same for Steamboat. Like, that's these guys complemented each other so well. It was incredible.
Totally. Yeah.
Flair actually kicks out of Steamboat's crossbody. Like, that was his finisher up to the double-arm chicken wing. But Flair kicks out of Steamboat's flying body press.
And you know, when Steamboat hit that, I don't know if you noticed, hella people on the across from the camera ran to the aisle because they thought the match was over.
That's it. That was his finisher.
Right. They're all running over there. Oh, that's the finisher. Like, I'm going to run over there and try to fucking, like, you know, high-five Steamboat. Like, they obviously thought that was the end of the match.
Right, exactly. So, 22 minutes into the third fall, Steamboat wins, but there's controversy. So, Steamboat again applies the double-arm chicken wing. It happens by the ropes. And they kind of, due to Flair working over Steamboat's leg, Steamboat fell back, lost his balance, fell back. Both guys' shoulders were pinned to the mat. Steamboat actually rolled up his left shoulder, but Flair's foot was rolled up in the ropes.
Right, it was right under the rope.
My impression was that Flair was vocally indicating submission, with even though it was a crazy fall. How did you tell who won? That's my only assumption of why they declared Steamboat the winner of that.
Okay,
but the ref still counted the three though.
Yeah,
he still slapped the mat three times.
I mean, you could still slap it. I mean, that's just human nature, but why, after making a three count, why would he indicate the person who was on the bottom the winner? My only assumption is that was the case. He heard of another vocal submission.
Yeah, and again, Tommy Young's involved, so there's going to be shenanigans, right? We talked about that. Flair was wrapped up in the ropes. Steamboat rolled up his shoulder. Tommy Young saw the shoulder roll up, still saw Flair pinned, and declared Steamboat the winner. So post-match, they're interviewing Steamboat backstage, and Steamboat is advised of the shenanigans with the pinfall, and now you're setting up the trilogy. Now you're setting up the third match, the rematch.
We gotta go one more.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. And now you have your main event for WrestleWar 89, which actually ends up not being the main event of WrestleWar 89. It actually falls in the middle of the card.
Oh, is that true?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was in the middle of the card.
I didn't know that because I just went onto the network and searched for this match. I didn't realize that was... What was the main event?
Oh, man. Right before it was Road Warriors versus Rotundo and Williams, but I don't remember what the main event was. I don't recall if they had to put it in the middle because they worried about running out of time. Because these guys, again, 60 minutes was no problem. So they could go an hour.
Right.
So I don't know if they did it because of time constraint concerns. But okay. Yeah, it was almost dead center right in the middle of the card.
Okay.
If this list is correct, it was a tag team match for the NWA US tag team titles. Varsity Club.
That was
Varsity Club and Steiner Brothers.
Wait, that was the main event?
If this list is correct, it may not be. Actually, I'll check the more reliable source.
Yeah, I think that was actually a botch on WCW's part. I don't think that another match was supposed to main event. Like, this should have been the main event. It was that good.
Oh, fuck yeah, dude. How do you finish off a match with fucking IRS?
First Family versus Varsity Club.
What the fuck?
The first fan. So that was Eddie Gilbert and Rick Steiner?
Looks like it, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cool.
And the Varsity Club was Kevin Sullivan and somebody. So that was your main event.
Yeah.
Interesting. Very interesting. And Flair and Steamboat go in the middle of the card. What?
Very WCW.
What a WCW thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
They should have had a drunk podcast.
Yeah.
I think one of my favorite remarks when Eric Bischoff threw The Rock out of an episode of Raw. No wonder WCW went out of business.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Thank you for looking that up. Mm-hmm. Fact checked, Adam.
Happy to.
So I think one of the funniest parts of this match is the entrance. And
you talk about the next one or the third one?
Yeah, I'm talking about WrestleWar 89.
Oh, dude, the entrance fucking ruled.
Yeah, and they really, really were trying to portray both guys in that light of here is the former champion who's all about the women, the money, the lifestyle, and here is the current champion who's all about his wife and his kid and his donkey.
So, yeah, exactly. He comes to the ring on a donkey or a pony or whatever the fuck that is.
The kid does, not Ricky Steamboat.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. The kid does. Yeah, he's dressed like the Honky Tonk Man.
Right. Yes.
Ricky Steamboat's wife is dressed like fucking Colonel Sanders.
Right.
Which, this is all very weird for a martial arts expert. Like, he's like Jimmy Wang Yang. You know what I mean?
Okay,
like, the guy's...
Yes.
The guy's named after a Bruce Lee movie, and his fucking wife is dressed up like, you know, the KFC guy.
Yes.
It was insane. I've never seen anything like it.
But meanwhile, Flair comes to the ring with like a harem of 40 women.
Oh yeah, he comes out there like he's fucking Snoop Dogg.
So if you're like the vocal male in the crowd watching this back in 1989, you're like, dude, who am I cheering for?
Right, 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 right. Yeah,
I want to be that guy.
Yeah, do I like the Kentucky fucking Colonel or the fucking Ho Train?
Yeah, I mean, Ricky could have redeemed himself by like hosting a donkey show or something. That didn't happen. He had a donkey all ready and everything. No donkey show. That doesn't happen. Anyway,
I don't think Ricky Steamboat's the one I wanted to see with the donkey in a donkey show on that pay per view. I'd have to go back and look at the rest of the roster. You know,
well, Jim Ross was there.
Okay, I was thinking Big Bubba, but
that guy could move.
Yeah, he could. I mean, so the dexterity of that man.
Yeah. The weird thing about this match, another weird thing besides the donkey, judges at ringside.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
What the... Okay, so if there's a count out or a disqualification or both guys get counted out, so it's going to go to a judge's score?
Right, only if it was a non-finish, but it was weird because they were doing the judge... It was weird, but it was actually kind of cool. The judges were turning their scores into the announcers every 15 minutes.
Yes, and so they relayed that to the home audience, so you kind of knew who was ahead.
Right. So you've got Luthez, Terry yep. Funk, and Pat O'Connor, who I thought would have been about 300 years old at that point, but apparently he was still alive.
Almost. He was 288. You were close.
Okay. Yeah, it was like the Crypt Keeper is judge number three.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I was like, oh, it's Terry Funk, Luthez, and Mr. Burns.
Yeah, I know one of these guys.
Yeah, right. But the match started out hard, dude. It was Chop City, bitch.
Yes, yes, hell of chops. Very much. Now, did you notice at the beginning of the match during introductions, you really started to hear the Boo Birds for Steamboat?
Yeah, yeah.
And you could really hear the cheers for Flair.
Yep.
And I think it's honestly because WCW went so heavy on portraying the two guys in two entirely different lights. I think if you had just kind of left them alone, like not brought Steamboat's wife and kid into it, and just let Flair be Flair.
Right.
I think the natural face heel dynamic of this match and the previous two matches as well would have retained to what it normally would be with Steamboat as the face, Flair as the heel. But because right. they really put the spotlight on the two different lifestyles, that really caused the crowd to kind of turn.
Mm-hmm. I don't think Steamboat needed that whole family thing. He could have just been like...
Just Steamboat.
I mean, right, might like at well. Three with Macho Man, there was none of that shit. You know, but right. you loved him because he was great in the ring. He was a nice guy. Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
But they went too far. With those.
They really did. Yes, yeah. I 100% agree with you. 100% went too far.
That might have been the original shoving someone down people's throats like Roman Reigns was years ago.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep. They went way too far with the whole good guy, goody two shoes gimmick. And I think ultimately it worked against Steamboat. It worked for Flair because before we get to the end of this match, he changes character. And yeah. so whatever they were going humble. For.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So ultimately what they did worked. But I think at the end of it, their lucky Steamboat didn't turn into a heel because of it.
Right, right. Yeah, they were treading a thin line.
You're right. The crowd was already starting to shit all over it.
Yeah.
And by treading that thin line, it really could have tipped with the crowd just hating Ricky Steamboat. So you're right. The match, it started off just a house of fire. And as I mentioned earlier, I will put Steamboat's chops up with anybody that's ever chopped anyone in a wrestling ring before. That dude could fucking go, and he could chop the shit out of your chest. Yeah. So, according to the judges, after 15 minutes, Steamboat is ahead on points. And that's unanimous. All three judges have Steamboat ahead.
Right, right.
Because points matter.
Yeah.
Now,
as we learned in WCW, math and wrestling, keep up.
Yes, yes.
Yep, there you go.
And you really start to sense, after that first 15 minutes, the crowd really starts to turn to Flair's side. Like, you heard it during the introductions, but as the match carries on, it really starts to go to their side.
Because he's so fucking Flair's good.
Side. Yeah. Exactly. And as I said, 89 Flair was absolutely at the top of his game. Mm-hmm. After the end of the next 15 minutes, two out of the three judges have Flair on top, and one still has Steamboat.
Yeah, it's a split decision at that point.
Right. So what do you have up to this point in your notes?
Just sort of a bit of a, I definitely feel like Steamboat was controlling the match for the most part.
Yes. Agree.
I have in my notes that he was doing chops in the corner because he's Asian. And this is 1989.
Well, also chop was one of his staple moves, but sure.
But you know what I mean? I also, like, they did a spot, I think it was a crossbody. Steamboat hit Flair with the crossbody over the top rope, and they just landed just perfectly. Like,
they did that every single match, though.
Yeah, but those guys...
All three of these.
They were just so good, you know? Just so,
yes.
Like, I mean, just as a note about, like, how good they were as wrestlers. Not about the match itself, necessarily, but, like, they just were fucking perfect. Everything they did was just good.
Yeah.
It looked good. It looked safe. They were great.
That's chemistry.
Yeah, right, right.
So I've got down Steamboat goes for a double chicken wing, and Flair blocks it. So Steamboat's going for the new finisher.
Mm-hmm.
He hits a chop off the top rope, goes to the top rope to hit it again. Flair shakes the rope, and Steamboat falls from the top rope to the outside.
Yeah.
That's where it kind of starts to turn for Steamboat. Like, that's kind of the beginning of the end. Steamboat comes back in, gets hit with a figure four, weakens mm-hmm. Steamboat's leg, And this comes into the finish because Steamboat gets out of it. He goes to slam Ric Flair, leg buckles. Flair rolls him up for a small package. Flair is your new champion for the sixth time.
It was the Macho Man. It was the WrestleMania 3 finish.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
I love the finish. It was like, it wasn't like Flair got lucky. It was like he just outworked him.
Yes, and I love that the figure four came into play.
That was the general sense. I don't think that any one of them was like more physically dominating or intending to hit the right move at the right time. It was wear them down and then look for your opportunity, and that was the sense I got between the two of them.
Right, they both came out of this looking strong. Like Steamboat, like lost ultimately, but he didn't look bad. You know,
right?
They both had great fundamental wrestling. It was just a, it was just a good match on the technical sense.
Yeah,
yeah, and actually, after this, like like you mentioned, Ed, that both guys came out of this looking like $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
Steamboat actually went into a feud for the United States heavyweight title after this feud with Lex Luger.
Okay, so if you go online and you just Google Ric Flair's Ricky Steamboat trilogy. There are a lot of articles about this. One of them was on WWE.com, and they interviewed both guys about it. And it was actually, I think everyone should go Google that, find the WWE article. It was really good. So I didn't know this. So after the match, Terry Funk came in and started talking to Ric Flair. And Flair started acting like a dick and just beat up Terry Funk, right?
No, he didn't beat up Terry Funk.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm sorry. I totally have it backwards. I'm drunk.
it happens.
Yeah. They get into a big fucking brawl. Steamboat said that he did not know that was going to happen. He found out about it when he was walking up the aisle to leave the match. He thought that there was going to be a fourth match the whole time. Like, he always assumed. Yeah, he said when he found out he was losing this one, he always assumed he was going to get a rematch as the former champion. I don't know if he said that he thought he was going to win or lose, but he definitely thought there was going to be match number four. And he was kind of disappointed about that.
I never knew that.
Right. Yeah, it was really interesting to read that. There are a lot of articles online if you just like type in this trilogy. And that was one of the best ones, though. It was really cool to read
Yeah, absolutely. And to go back and watch the trilogy, too, you really see what happens when two guys just have it. They've got chemistry when they step inside the ropes. They can call it in the ring and put on a masterpiece. And in this case, it was three masterpieces. And I loved the end of the match. Steamboat went up, congratulated Flair, really stayed in that face character. And Jim Ross gets in the ring to interview Flair. Flair has kind words for Steamboat, which is way out of character for Flair.
Right.
And you can start to see the turn of Flair's character. And then Terry Funk gets in the ring, starts being an asshole, and he basically tells Flair that he wants a match. Flair tells him he's been off rubbing shoulders with Hollywood celebrities, which was over the top.
Sylvester Stallone specifically.
Yes, exactly. And basically turns him down, and then Terry Funk loses his shit. He pile drives Flair through a table that doesn't break. They played up a whole neck injury on Flair. And they did a great job of building that next feud, but I would have liked to see Steamboat get that fourth match.
It would have been cool.
Just to bring it full circle, give Flair the win, that's fine, but give the former champion his shot. As I mentioned, Steamboat went on to feud with Lex Luger for the United States title. Did not win it, but it really made both guys... Steamboat ultimately was the loser of the trilogy. But both guys, as you said, Ed, really came out looking like $1 million.
Totally.
And showed that both of these guys were just masters of what they did in the ring. And when these guys got together, it was pure chemistry.
Totally. Yeah, I mean, they were as good together as anyone ever was.
Oh, absolutely. And if you could put three matches back to back to back of any two guys ever, I think you'd be hard-pressed to find three better matches. These are all outstanding. Yeah, Each one is good on its own merit. So if you have a chance, if you can devote like 2-3 hours to this, absolutely do it. Do like Ed did and just search the matches on the network. You won't be disappointed.
Yeah, the 2 out of 3 falls match is only on YouTube. It's not on the network, but it's right there on YouTube, so you can see it for free.
You can find it. The Clash of Champions is on the network.
Oh, you found it?
Oh, yeah, that's where I watched it, dude. It's on the network. You just got to go to the Clash of Champions.
Okay. All right, cool. Yeah.
Either way, it's on there.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
So overall, I thought they were really good matches. I thought they did a good job of protecting Flair in his losses.
Yes.
You know, he was clearly the man. Like, he was obviously the guy that he was their moneymaker.
Right.
I thought the Superdome attendance was hilarious. I think the trilogy deserves the reputation it has.
Yes.
And I think it was the second match. I think it was the 2 out of 3 falls match. Meltzer called the match of the year. I disagree. I think Hogan and Bossman was the match of the year.
You love that match.
I love it. Also, Ric Flair, it seems from reading that interview, hated Ricky Steamboat's wife, which is fucking hilarious.
Well,
and,
And
Flair didn't think the Raging Cajun match was that great because he thought the crowd was brutal. And I think it was the last match Steamboat didn't think was that great. They both thought that they had had better matches on house shows.
And that could be true. Those guys have wrestled each other 1,000 times.
Right, right.
So, yeah, I'm sure that they did.
Yeah, I don't doubt that at all.
Yeah. I highly suggest the listeners go watch the trilogy. Outstanding.
Yes, sir.
Won't be disappointed. Yep.
I think we covered that.
That's Flair versus Steamboat. Again, this is 1989 with WCW. Make sure that you check those out. Again, that's for reference, Chi-Town Rumble, and then
Clash of Champions.
Yeah, Clash of Champions, and then Wrestle War. That pretty much covers it. Again, let us know what you think, and keep those episode ideas coming. Keep interacting with us because we need company when we're all sheltering in place during this time, or just still at home recovering from drunk podcasting. I mean, you guys are in good shape, so I don't think that will apply. So,
and we like drinking buddies.
In general, yeah. I mean, also, to those of you that have given drinking suggestions and even found the Mr. Perfect beer, thank you for letting us know about that.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So, that's going to be on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, wrestling_drunk. That is our handle. And on behalf
of... Buy the shirt.
Yes. Shirts on whatamaneuver.net. This is the shirt. Whatamaneuver.net. It is comfortable AF. And we will think you look awesome in it. You look awesome without it, but you look even more awesome with it on.
It's a scientific fact. The ladies love it.
Oh, yeah.
The men do, too.
Ladies love cool drunk wrestling history.
See, yes, that's another shirt idea. We cannot get to that one until that one is purchased, or the original one is purchased. All right. On behalf of Scott and Eddie, I'm Adam, letting you know we want you to enjoy a buzz, drink, watch wrestling responsibly, drink like no one's watching.
Adam drunk?
It's that rat bastard.
It was that rat bastard. I don't think I put it in the right orifice. I think I missed the directions on it. Stay 6 feet apart or more. Wash your hands. Wear a GD mask. And 1, 2, 3.
Woo!
Dive. Cheers.
It's a show not like you've ever seen before. In the park from noon till after dark. There will be blondes and also girls of bronze and girls who come from other countries round the world. Now you will see a big display of ladies in a cage, but naked, and they're showing off their curves in sexy ways. So pack a bag and come on down if you can find the time. We just would like to say welcome to Gutfest 89. Crazy guts, it's
Gutsfest 89. Crazy guts, crazy guts. It's Gutsfest 89. Crazy guts, crazy guts. It's Gutsfest 89. The festival is on the lake. The hotel's up the block.
It's clean, they've got good rates, and they've got lots of rooms in stock.
Tell them you're here for Gutfest, you'll get $10 off per night.
Bring your camera and your condoms, cause we're going to do this right.
More girls than you have ever seen are on display right now.
Girls with breasts that go for boom and booties that go pow.
Black girls, white girls, candy striped girls, girls with lots of back fat.
It's safe to say more healthy guts than you can shake a stick at.
I troop in, now let the gut fest begin. It seems like sin, my head is starting to spin. Thinking what I'm about to clock, all stops are being yanked out. I'm not gonna stank out the box. Every chance I get because I've waited and waited to make this trip.
Yeah, one big stupid butt nest.
And I'ma get mine in this gut fest.
Crazy guts, crazy guts, it's gut fest 89.
I kicked it with a real cute Chinese girl. Sometimes after the shows at night or in the afternoon, some guts come up and give you skull right in your hotel room. Most nice girls do not give good brain. For others, it's a racket. Some guys leave Gutfest out of luck and go home with a packet. Big, large, girls with lots of gook. Cover girls and model types, girls who got the look. Young butterfly, tulip petal, mahogany divine. A thick bitch with big legs, yeah, it's Gutfest 89.
Gutfest, Gutfest.
Gutfest 89.
Gutfest, Gutfest.
Gutfest 89, y'all.
Crazy guts, crazy guts.
Gutfest 89.
Gutfest, Gutfest.
And don't stop.
That's okay. It's just the greatest thing in the world, and if you're not already here, you need to get down here. See you next year, Ted.
Thanks, Bill. So, folks, that's just going to about wrap up our coverage of Gutfest 89 this year. Bill, you did a wonderful job of covering this thing.
Thanks, Ted.
Bill, is everything okay down there, or what?
Well, no, the commotion seems to be they've got one cage down here, and they've got about 15 girls in one cage. And some of the girls started to fight with each other, and it was really a mess, and they're all in there rolling.